Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time to drop the puck. Time for the Nightcap. Your home for news and insider info on your Vegas Golden Knights and the NHL. Let's hear from the goalie. Here's Lindsey Brown.
Hey, how are ya? And welcome back to another installment of the Nightcap. We appreciate you choosing to join us tonight to talk some Golden Knights hockey on the dial via CBS Sports Radio 1140 or streaming on the radio.com app. We don't care how you get here as long as you're here. We're all here for friends. Speaking of which, one of my friends who joins me each and every week on the Nightcap, Ben Goetz. Hello, Benji.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, that is quite the reintroduction. What's going on? Right on, Ben. My name is Lindsey Brown, your host always and forever. And Ben, forgot to tell you where you work. Where can we find all of your great things that you do on the line and on the paper otherwise?
Yeah, I am currently employed by the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I hope to keep it that way. It's been going good so far, so fingers crossed. So find all my stuff at reviewjournal.com. Some real hot, great action going on today, grading the Golden Knights through two periods of their season so far, because they're almost two-thirds of the way done.
Right.
And then I'm on Twitter at Ben S. Goetz, G-O-T-Z.
Oh, nice. Well, that reminds me to give my handles out as well. My handle is at Lindsey Brown. That's L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, because that's the correct way to spell the name Lindsey. And then Brown, like the color, and then the numerical value of 35. Now we've got all that out of the way, as Shang from Milan said. Let's get down to business. We're going to start off the program a little bit differently today because obviously there's been quite an event that took place yesterday in the sports world. Kobe Bryant, his daughter, among others, involved in a helicopter crash. All of them have unfortunately passed away. And I guess, Ben, it's weird because for the most part, I wasn't a Lakers fan. I think you and I are both from Minnesota. We have a very adversarial relationship with the Lakers organization because they started in Minnesota. They left.
Name makes no sense for them.
Right. And Kobe being an athlete who definitely has skeletons in his history, but for the most part is one of those athletes that has transcended the sport and transcended the success that he had in that sport, which considering how much that he had is crazy to think about. And I found myself reflecting a lot yesterday as this news was coming out. And then today we spent a lot of the program on the playmakers talking about Kobe's legacy, his impact as a parent, as a player, as a man. And so I wanted to take some time today to discuss Kobe because I think it's important that we recognize big moments like this, big emotional public consciousness, kind of raising moments. And so just to start things off, Ben, for you, where were you yesterday when you found out about the accident?
Yeah, I was just at home with my dog, my girlfriend, and then two other dogs that we were dog sitting. But I mean, I think the reaction that I had, that I think everyone probably had, was just sadness. It was just so sad that it happened that way. It was even more crushing to hear that, of course, his daughter was involved in the crash too. I mean, that's someone who's just so young, had so much life ahead, and obviously you talk to anyone, she had such a bright future,
right?
And had so much ahead of her that was just really crushing to me as well. I mean, it just feels like, obviously, you know, this is kind of a cliche, but it's just too soon. Like, there was a lot more chapters to be written in Kobe's book. I mean, as you mentioned, there's some skeletons in the closet in the past there, but also at the same time, it seemed like there were going to be a lot more chapters that he was going to, you know, bring forward about women's sports and how much he was supporting his daughters.
Absolutely.
And obviously fans of the Las Vegas Aces know that he brought his girls team, I believe, to an Aces game last season.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you know, so many cool things that he was doing in the here and now that you wanted to see continue potentially and, you know, keep making a positive impact, you know, not just on, you know, the various communities that he played in, but just kind of the entire world.
Right.
And so it is sad that the book kind of had to be closed this early.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, growing up, because I was I had a very similar relationship, I think, and the bits and pieces that we've seen in social media about Gigi and her relationship with Kobe, her dad, and how similar they were and similarly obsessed with the game of basketball. And so when you have that kind of mutual obsession about something and how joining that is, especially for like a father-daughter relationship, and I think that's what's been the toughest thing for me because I feel like that's my relationship right there too. And so, to, like you said, it's the tragedy, it's the quickness, it's the randomness of it, and in terms of your heroes are meant to, your heroes are your heroes because they show you what we're capable of, like as human beings. But you also have to remember they're heroes for showing us what they're not capable of. Like nobody has control over anything. None of all of us are just here, and we just forget about that sometimes, and how fleeting life is, and how important the relationships that we have in our lives, especially with those closest to us. It's so important, especially in athletics, and is something that's very prevalent through the hockey community. I mean, I was watching the All-Star game, which I'm sure a lot of people in this great community where you were, I mean, Max Pacioretty was participated, took home some cash while being there too. But one of the things that was highlighted during that time was TJ Oshie, who happens to be from Minnesota and plays for the Washington Capitals. Obviously, where lots of people in Las Vegas are familiar with him. But his relationship with his father has been something that was very prevalent during their run to the Stanley Cup. And his dad struggles with memory loss, with some issues with that. And it's just, when you're involved in athletics like we are, when you grow up in tight-knit communities, kind of like how you and I did in Minnesota, it's hard because you see that every day. And just to see it like at the biggest level with the biggest celebrity, someone who had everything going for, I mean, Kobe won an Oscar, for God's sakes. Like, it's in addition to basketball, in addition to everything else, and being a good father and everything, and just to be gone. And so, I don't know. I don't know how to resolve it. I don't know how to discuss it other than just saying like how I feel about it, you know, but maybe that's exactly what this, where we are right now.
Yeah, there's no really way to resolve it. I think it's just kind of a reminder and probably a good perspective builder that like everything is precious and not to take anything for granted. And just, you know, I just can't help but think like, okay, Kobe and his daughter woke up yesterday and thought they were just going to go to a basketball game. Like,
yep.
That was the purpose.
With her friends, with
right.
the other people on that
of the helicopter
chopper.
Ride and
yeah.
how... you know, terribly, like we said, tragic that is, that not only was that taken away from them, but then their whole lives were, I mean, literally taken away from them. And so that just, I think, brings a lot of perspective, at least to me, thinking about like, okay, like there's always a chance that you never know what's going to happen mm-hmm. in your life, and that not to take moments for granted, to hug those you love tight, to go visit those you love, and maybe don't always take the time to visit or mm-hmm. call those you always don't take time to call, because you just never know what's going to happen. And that's perspective that, you know, I think we all need at some point in our lives. I know there's people in my life that I probably take for granted, or
100%.
Thinking they're always going to be there, that, hey, you know, if I don't call this person, I can hit them back tomorrow or the next week or something. And you just never know.
Right.
And that's what's so tragic. And I also think so powerful about what happened yesterday, is it just, you know, reminds us how precious this all is.
Right. I don't remember, and trust it, like, I think you and I are roughly about the same age. Like, I remember exactly where I was, and I'm not equating this event to what happened to Kobe Bryant. Both are tragic, both are very sad stories, and both are very different situations. But I remember exactly where I was when 9/11 happened. I remember where I was when I found out when Prince died. Prince is obviously a huge member, or a huge part of the Minnesota community. And I don't remember an athlete, at least the groundswell, coming up like it has for Kobe. And that's what I think is important, because in this moment, sports mean nothing, but also sports mean everything in moments like these. You know what I mean? Because you would think yesterday when they're playing basketball, they're like, why would you, these guys probably don't want to play the games. They probably, and I'm sure some of them didn't want to, but it's also important to play, because you think like, of all people, Kobe would be like, go play basketball.
Right.
What are you doing? And they're like, if there's one way to honor me, it's with fierce competition. You know what I mean? And so it's just, it's such a weird bit, and it's just, I don't know. I see it all over hockey. I see it all over. I mean, the NHL does dad's trips. Some of them do mom's trips. I mean, it's just so important, I think, for all of us to kind of take a moment and just think about what we're doing, who we're with, and what our path is leading us down. Because I don't think most of us take a minute to just be like, am I heading anywhere right now? You know, am I back checking? Am I helping out in front of the net? Am I doing everything that I possibly could do to make sure I'm being a good teammate, a good friend, a good family member, brother, sister, son, daughter, whatever? you know, and so I just wanted to address it, and I'm glad that you're here and that we can kind of discuss this.
I'm glad that you're here too.
Yes. So, you know, we'll just move on from this. We're going to leave that as it is. And why don't we do this? Because we're kind of in the middle of this weird moment for the Golden Knights because, you know, they've been on the road for a while. We just had the All-Star game. They're on their bye week technically as well. And we're not going to see them play until Friday. So Ben, if I had to ask you right now at this very moment at 6:12 p.m. with 7, 8, 9 seconds past that minute, how do you feel about the Golden Knights?
I have a lot of feelings, and it's hard to kind of put them all into words because so much just seems scrambled right now. I mean, we haven't done a show or talked about the fact that they fired their coach.
Well, we did. Didn't we do half a show? Or, you know, you came on the Playmakers. That's right. We haven't had a show since they fired.
We have not had a show, just the two of us.
Yes.
Since they fired their coach, the only coach that the franchise has ever known.
Yes.
Replaced him with the coach of their arch rival.
Hated arch rival.
Yes. In a very fascinating move for a number of reasons. And that they've basically, really, Kelly McCrimmon and George McKee have really put themselves all in to this roster by saying it was the coach's problem and that we think a new coach can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're looking at a team that's 18th in points percentage in the league, that's precariously holding on to the second wildcard spot in the Western Conference, that begins a 4-game trip right out of its bye and also 5 road games out of 6.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be swimming upstream for a while here.
Right. I saw your tweet earlier. I saw it. What is their strength of schedule?
They have the 9th hardest strength of schedule the rest of the season. They also play teams that have roughly a 590 points percentage just until the end of February. They play only 4 of their 14 games until the end of February against teams with more losses than wins. This is a tough stretch that they're just walking into, and they all of a sudden had to figure out that out while, of course, figuring out potentially some system tweaks under a new coach, some special teams tweaks under a new coach.
And I mean, player tweaks, potentially, because we're approaching the trade deadline as well. And
there's a lot going on. There's a lot to process. So when you ask me how I feel about the Golden Knights,
yes,
it's all over the place. I mean, I talked to my colleague Dave Shane the other day because he got back from their 4-game road trip preceding the All-Star break in the bye. And I just felt like he was, you know, drinking water out of a fire hose on that trip because there was just so much going on in terms of the coach being fired, a new coach being hired. What's the new coach is going to do? How did players react to losing the former coach? How do they react to having a new coach? How are they reacting to the fact that they almost just completely got boat raced in Montreal, fought back to tie that game, then still lost?
Right. Only won one game on that road trip so far. They've only won one. It was against the Ottawa Senators, who are not great.
Yeah. They kind of missed an opportunity on that road trip because they played 3, you know, pretty not so great teams in the Buffalo Sabres, Montreal Canadiens.
Mediocre or worse.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ottawa Senators, and just got one regulation win out of there, also got an overtime loss against the Montreal Canadiens, then just lost to the Sabres and, of course, the Boston Bruins, who are a really good team. But there's so much to unpack there that it's hard to even process, like I said, your feelings, because it does feel like, to me, as I described it to my colleague Dave, like you're drinking water out of a fire hose. There's so much coming at the Knights right now, and there's so much that's going to be keep coming at them, because like I said, right after coming off the bye week, it's like, hey guys, hope you rested, recharged. Now we're going right back to hockey because I got to show you how we're tweaking stuff in the defensive zone.
Right. It's almost like this bye week could not come at a worse time. And granted, sometimes byes, they're just not good in some seasons. It just depends on how the year is. But this year has been so inconsistent. And like you said, with the addition of a new coach and a new coaching staff and a new kind of outlook and potentially new line mates, new teammates, it's tough to find the footing that you never really had to start with this season. So to have the bye coincide with All-Star break and then jump right back into it, have the strength of schedule remaining on the docket and being in a 4-way tie for second place in the Pacific. That's great. It looks great when you just look at that. But when you said the opponents of the remaining on their schedule with their average point percentage, you said 590, correct?
Yeah, it's around there. Basically, they're playing the Vancouver Canucks every night from now until the end of February.
If I'm not mistaken, their points percentage right now is 0.490. So that's a whole tenth above, right? And just sit with it for a second that the Golden Knights, tied for second place with four other teams in Pacific Division, have a less than 500 points percentage. So that's where we're at. That's where I'm just trying to get this gut check, because we're in this weird little bye week and stuff, and it's been a while. Like you said, I didn't even realize that we hadn't done our show, but I suppose it makes sense because we didn't have our show last week, unfortunately. But yeah, there's so much to unpack. We're not going to get through all of it today, but that's why we have a show every week, and that's why we have the Playmakers. That's why you write for who you do, and that's why I do radio every day. It's going to be great. We're all going to be holding hands and skipping down the road.
Singing Kumbaya,
hopefully right to the Stanley Cup playoffs. But the Golden Knights have a lot of work to do to make sure that they can just get in to have a chance at that magical Stanley Cup playoff run that they're looking to start. But they got to get out of the Pacific Division first. On the other side of the break, we're going to take our first break tonight. We are going to explore a couple other trade options. It's something we did last month before the Christmas break. And now that some other names have emerged and I've come up with a couple myself that we haven't really talked about, Ben and I are going to talk about those. So, yeah, this is The Nightcap. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host, always and forever. That's Ben Goetz. And this is The Nightcap, streaming on CBS Sports Radio 1140 and on the radio.com app.
Your Monday Night Power Play, The Nightcap, on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Hey, hi, how are you? Welcome back to The Nightcap. As we kick off the second portion of the show tonight, I would like to remind you that it is Soups. Soups, easy. Soups is short for super, just for all the, you know, dictionary people out there.
Now I know.
It's super easy to listen back to this very show, any other future Nightcaps, any past things. I mean, we throw things up on that we did on the Playmakers on the Nightcap feed. We had a couple of hockey related interviews there. You can find all of that stuff. All you got to do is subscribe on Apple Podcasts and literally search the Nightcap, hit that purple subscribe button. And you can do that exact same thing on the radio.com app. Both of those things can be found in your app store, whether you have an Android phone, an iPhone. I don't think the Nokia ones that would survive nuclear warfare probably download them super well. But if you got, you know, something that's been made in the last decade, I'm sure you should have no problem finding that. And if you don't have a phone, it's okay. You can find it on CBSSportsRadio1140.com, on the website, on the internets, like the good old days. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host always and forever. And I'm joined each and every week, and this week including, by
I'm here.
Ben, my fellow homelander from Minnesota.
Thank you. I appreciate the little fireworks.
The rap air horn, man. It's the best cat call thing we got up in here.
I feel hyped.
You feel hyped. We need to cut that up for future. I feel hyped. Brilliant.
So hyped.
Brilliant. And so you and I were kind of getting our general feelings about the Golden Knights, because we find ourselves in this really weird dead period for the Golden Knights, of them being on the road for pretty much all of January, for it being All-Star Weekend, for their bye kind of coinciding at the same time. We're not going to see this team again until Friday when they take on the Carolina Hurricanes, who are definitely a very good team, but due to recent injuries, find themselves a little bit with their backs against the wall in terms of competing in the Metropolitan Division. And we talked about the strength of schedule the Golden Knights have remaining for through the rest of the way out, and we've always talked about how crazy competitive the Pacific Division is. And one of the things that the Golden Knights are probably going to have to do if they're looking to make the playoffs, if they're looking to make a run in the playoffs, is to shore up some parts of their team. And mainly the biggest focus for me, and I'm sure it is for you, and I'm sure it is for everyone, is a defenseman. Because the Golden Knights have really struggled with their defensive zone lately, and pretty much all season, that inconsistency, getting stuck and breakout, stuff like that. The defenseman, somebody who can eat up some minutes and provide some stability on the back end, is going to be incredibly important for the Golden Knights to seek out if they want to make a run at the playoffs, if they want to make a run at the Stanley Cup. So, Ben, I'm going to let you go first. I asked you to bring a trade person in, of someone that the Golden Knights may target in the upcoming trade deadline. Who is that player and why?
Yeah, we're going to talk about Brendan Dillon of the San Jose Sharks.
What?
Who was just coached by one Peter DeBoer, who is
we
now
like the Sharks,
coaching
though.
The Golden Knights. As you said, like, defenseman is the easiest area, I think, to see that the Knights are going to address. I would expect them to address it. Outside of Shea Theodore, it's hard to pinpoint a guy on their blue line who you can look at and say, like, he's having a great season. Naismith, I think, is capable of having a great season. I don't think he's having a great season right now.
Mm-mm.
Same with Braden McNabb, who I think has played really well with Schmidt in a top pair role before, in a shutdown role against opposing top lines. They did really good, actually, their last game against the Boston Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
They just haven't been there consistently enough. But I think the Knights will look to bring in, you know, at least a usable defenseman that can either be a puck mover or more of a defensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dylan is more of the defensive guy. I think you could potentially put him on your second pair right now with Shea Theodore, who's playing on the right side. You would have Dylan fill in on the left side and kind of be the defensive guy of that pair. We saw last year Shea Theodore and Braden McNabb actually formed a really good pair kind of down the stretch last season, then into the playoffs. This would kind of be replicating that, though I think Dylan is probably Braden McNabb light in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
He's making about $3.2 million this year, so that would be a little bit trickier for the Knights to fit under the cap. They would probably have to send a couple extra assets the Sharks' way to have them eat some of that money. But the Knights have extra draft picks because they, of course, traded guys like Colin Miller and Nikita Gusev this offseason. They clearly want to win now. You don't fire your coach midseason to punt on the playoffs if they don't make an addition. That is the front office basically saying, we screwed up by firing our coach. If then, you know, about a month and a half later, you decide to be sellers or just non-participants at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a move because obviously Dylan has familiarity with Peter DeBoer going back to the Sharks days. And from comments he's made since DeBoer got hired by the Golden Knights, he respects him as a coach a lot. This is a move that would make sense to me if they can make the financials work. You get a guy that you can plug in to your second pair. Is he the greatest defensive defenseman out there? No. Like I said, he's probably around Braden McNabb level, maybe a little bit behind. But it would give you some stability in that second pair because Shea Theodore's rotated through a lot of partners this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be curious what a more steady partner could do to unlock his game because he's already kind of breaking out this year.
Let me ask you this. It's not very common to trade within your division, let alone ahead of a trade deadline. It has to be almost like a cookie cutter deal where it makes too much sense. Why would the Sharks want to make this deal?
Well, I guess we'll have to see. I mean, the Sharks, we all know, have to do something at this deadline. They are clearly out of it, and they have too many kind of large contracts to move at this point. They're not going to be able to move Erik Karlsson's humongous deal. They're not going to be able to get up from all the money they owe Brent Burns. They gave Evander Kane a lot of money. Logan Couture is owed a lot of money. Even Tomas Hertl, even though I don't think he's overpaid, has a long-term deal. So
pretty good this weekend. That's all I got to say.
It's true. So Brendan Dillon, who's an unrestricted free agent this summer, is one of the few guys on their roster right now where they could conceivably move and get some assets back to try to reload because they don't have a first-round pick this year. They traded that to the Senators to get Erik Karlsson.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to scrounge for assets wherever they can right now because their farm system isn't that good either.
That's been
right
gutted
now
through trade as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
they're a dollar late and a day short, you're essentially
beggars
saying.
Can't be choosers.
This is true.
If the Knights come in with a good offer, the Sharks need to take good offers right now for players, especially players on expiring deals. And that's one of the things where I wonder if the Knights will actually explore this trade, because so far George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon have been extremely reluctant to take on guys who don't have additional term. They want guys who they know will be around for a little bit if they're going to give up assets for them. So that's kind of the main barrier too, is outside of the money. Will the Knights either get a deal done with Brendan Dillon or be able to figure out some way where he won't just be unrestricted free agent again at the end of the year, where he won't be a pure rental?
Well, it's okay. If it works out and he's a pure rental, it's great. But most of the time, I think people think it's a foregone conclusion that it's the rental player, like they're going to fit in with the new locker room really easily and really seamlessly. But that's not necessarily true for the most part. And honestly, I think it's less likely in the locker room here because of how tight-knit this team is. But regardless, whoever they bring in, and it doesn't matter if he's from the Sharks, and it doesn't matter if he's from the Capitals, it doesn't matter. They are players. This is a business. This is the bit. This is how it goes. And that's why I think Dylan is a very capable trade target that he could go after. And your reasoning's kind of almost the exact same for the player that I've brought to the table today, and that's Marco Scandella. It's something I previewed a little bit on the playmakers last week in terms of a potential player that the Golden Knights could target, because I haven't heard his name a lot. I've heard Dylan. I've heard Petrie. I've heard, you know, kind of your run of the mill things, but that's how it goes. But Marco Scandella for me is someone that's really interesting that the Golden Knights could look at, because he's 29. He's a defenseman, left shot. We could literally, like you said, plug and play with him with Shea Theodore. But this guy, 6'3", 212 pounds, and also on an expiring deal. So that deal would come off the books at the end of the year, which I think is actually an asset to the Golden Knights, because I think they already have their long-term contracts. I think you can, if you're going for a Stanley Cup run, if it's truly an all or nothing type of proposition this year, this is a move and with expiring term that you can do. His cap it is $4 million, but it's going to be less because you're only having him for the couple months of the season. But he doesn't do anything crazy offensively, but he has the tools, and he spent the good chunk of his early career with the Minnesota Wild. He was most recently, obviously, with Montreal. He's playing with on the top pair with Shea Weber. Don't know if you know who that is. You know, the guy who hits the big slap shot at the All-Star game this weekend, and definitely having a career resurgence year for him this year as well. After tearing his Achilles a couple seasons ago, we thought that, hey, this might be a guy that just can't quite get it done anymore. But he was on Buffalo before, and he wasn't seeing a lot of ice time there because Buffalo was a log jam on their defensive side. They had a lot of talented guys, and he's 29, so he's kind of past that prospect age where it's, you know, he's going to be the one that's moved rather than a 22-year-old who they haven't really seen develop yet. But for me, I need a defenseman. And because of his skating ability, because he has a little bit of a nose for the net, but doesn't have the head for it. Like, he's not always going to be that guy that jumps into the play, but has that capability and that physicality. I mean, Ryan Reeves tried to fight him a few years ago. I don't know if you remember that. And when he was with the Wild, and when Reeves was with the Blues in 2014. But he's a guy that's willing to throw his weight around, willing to answer the bell if he needs to, and has a cannon of a slap shot to boot. And I know that the Golden Knights have really struggled of getting pucks to the net, especially from the point, whether it's getting blocked or missing the net completely. And so for me, especially at that cap hit number and on the expiring deal, it's someone that I think not a lot of people are talking about in terms of having him be a trade target, but just talking about him in general as a solid defenseman in the NHL. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting that we have kind of the same player type.
Yes,
in mind,
we are both
too.
Geniuses, you and I, Ben.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. defensive defenseman who could potentially pair on one of your top four, which I think DeBoer is going to emphasize as top four a little bit more than Gallant, who is more egalitarian with how he divvied up ice time among his three pairs. You didn't see a huge disparity between the top pair and mm-hmm. the third pair. There was a disparity, but it wasn't as huge as DeBoer had in San Jose. Now, Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson obviously had a lot to do with that, but we've right. already seen the strata begin to expand a little bit.
Good word.
Thank you. When he's in charge of the Golden Knights, Shea Theodore is playing a lot more. Nate Schmidt is playing a lot more under DeBoer. And it's obviously a small sample size, but I would expect that to continue. So the Knights need, I think, another guy who DeBoer can trust to play big minutes with some of his other good players. Now, like I said, I still think that some of these cap hits and the fact that these are expiring deals will actually be an impediment to the Knights. Like, they just have not been willing to acquire pure rentals so mm-hmm. far under this regime.
Well, they've only had two chances.
Right, but they were going for it both times, and mm-hmm. both times they said,
"This is true."
You know, we, in the case of both Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone, they've said specifically, we were not going to make a trade for this player unless mm-hmm. we got an extension done. So we'll see if they're willing to change their tune this time around or whether they're going to stick to guys with the term.
Absolutely. There are plenty of options to explore, and something we will continually kind of update you guys or throw some things out there, ideas, as we approach the trade deadline in the coming weeks. We need to take another breather. When we come back from our second intermission, it's time for that special weekly segment we have that usually falls during the 35th minute. Be a little bit late today, but that's okay. And that's called Dump and Chase. That's Ben Goetz. My name is Lindsay Brown. This is The Nightcap on CBS Sports Radio 1140 and streaming on the radio.com app.
Time for a little Dump and Chase. The Nightcap on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
And welcome back to the Nightcap. It is time for our extra special dump and chase segment that always, or usually, but really rarely, actually occurs or starts during the 35th minute of the Nightcap, which occurs each and every Monday, 6 to 7 p.m. 35 was my hockey number. That's why it is special. And dump and chase, you know, we kind of know that term in hockey. You dump the puck in, you go a forecheck and hopefully catch them with their backs against the wall, and you generate an offensive scoring chance and hopefully a goal. But our version is when we just have random thoughts, streams of consciousness, you know, random facts about hockey that we've kind of thought of over the course of the week. And I wanted to kind of focus that and just make it about the All-Star game, because obviously we just finished with that. Just finished up with that yesterday, actually. And Max Pacioretty in the Pacific Division actually took home the crown of the All-Star game, and $1 million check to split between all of them to boot.
You know, ain't bad. Ain't bad scratch.
Not a bad weekend at the office. That's what all I got to say. But for you, what was the most interesting part of the All-Star game that was like most surprising? Something random.
Green Day versus the Censors. 1,000%. It was 100% Green Day just dropping F-bombs in the middle of their performance on NBC.
National TV.
Just no regard. And this is a band who I unabashedly love, by the
middle way. Middle school was defined by Green Day.
Yeah, so many beeps that they both did and didn't catch. Green Day threw them off a couple times and dropped in F-bombs they were not prepared to censor, which is incredible. Yes. Love Green Day so much. Love that they did this. I'm super weirded out by the fact that the NHL signed a multi-year deal with Green Day to be, like, their guys in the year of our Lord 2019.
The official sponsor of NHL Entertainment. Yes.
It was a weird choice. As someone who even loves Green Day, I have a Green Day coffee table book on my coffee table.
Yeah, American Idiot. It defined our youth.
Yeah. My sister helped edit that book. Shout out to you, Jessica. You're not listening, but, you know, I'll say that, Jess. I did this. So it was incredible to, watch them jump into songs like Basket Case, actually singing American Idiot and not censoring the words.
Oh, brilliant.
It was also great. So that was, I think, the most competitive All-Star game we actually had was Green Day
versus
trying
Batman.
Beat the censors. Not just Batman, the TV guy who had his finger over the button, ready to dump whenever Green Day dropped the F-bomb, and Billy Joe Armstrong just would not be contained.
And just some inside broadcasting. It might be a different fine for us, but obviously we don't sweat. We can't say certain words on the radio, and that's the same to be true for TV. And I'm pretty sure it's a hefty, it's like $250,000 or something like that for the F-bomb. Like, I'm serious. Like, it's a big deal, but there's like a court and things. But I'm here for it, and I'm here for the tizzy that I wish we all could have witnessed that Gary Bettman was probably in during that performance, just being like, what are they doing? What, they're swearing? It's not like that ice hasn't seen a few F-bombs flowing around itself, but when it's out in the open, in a family-friendly, you know, All-Star weekend and national TV.
It's incredible.
It's incredible. It's such a flex by Billy Joel Armstrong. I love it.
Yeah. The other more interesting thing to me from the All-Star game, because let's be honest, the play of the All-Star game is not all that.
What do you mean? It's so competitive and fun.
Oh, there were some rough moments for a lot of guys out there, but we talked about this briefly. I watched kind of the enhanced, like, stats version of the All-Star game where they had player and puck tracking technology. So they had the guy's ice time up on the top of the screen at all times. Then occasionally they would flash stuff like, okay, Max Pacioretty had a breakaway on Jordan Binnington. It was like, that wrist shot by Max Pacioretty was 82 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the distance that these players had skated. So at one point I was looking up at the Pacific Division team and McDavid had skated like basically a mile at that point in his skates. Does that really tell me that much more about the game? The distance part doesn't. The Pacioretty, how hard he threw the shot on net, really doesn't ultimately matter. But I thought it was kind of cool, and I thought it was just interesting to have those fun facts to throw out during the game.
I am here for the stats on the ribbon on the top. I'm here for it. I am not here for glowing puck. I'm not here for tail on the puck, and I'm not here for flying video names of the players. Like I said before, when we were off the air, if it's the frame of the picture, if it's the literal, like a picture frame, I'm fine with it. But if it's in the picture, if it's in the game, I don't like. But that's just me. Maybe other people, maybe we're ready to take that step as a sport, and I need to just, you know, grow up. But
yeah, we talked about it. Yeah, I thought the kind of glowing puck and the puck tail technology was less obnoxious than I think it could have been.
Yeah.
They've clearly been working on it. I am curious how much this is going to start affecting broadcasts once this tech is ready to go.
Right.
They said it's going to be like 100% in place by the time the postseason starts, mm-hmm. which as a hockey nerd, there's a lot of cool statty things that I like
100%.
Out of that. Because like they're tracking zone time,
yep.
which I think is fascinating. They're tracking possession
distance,
time.
Like
right.
all that stuff.
We're going to be able to measure passing in a way that we've never been able to measure passing in the NHL before. So there's a lot of cool things like that.
Absolutely.
In terms of how this is going to affect broadcasts, I wonder how much that's going to creep in
mm-hmm.
to just your average, like, is AT&T Sportsnet next year going to start doing a lot of this stuff? Or is it going to be like what I experienced in the All-Star game, which is just like you can do for the college football playoff if you're so inclined, or the Super Bowl if you're so inclined.
Sure.
And if you want like a more stat heavy, or even like, you know, I know they have for ESPN a coach's perspective, you can mm-hmm. go to ESPN2 or ESPN News.
Yeah, and I love that.
And get a
thing.
Separate broadcast.
100%.
No, and I like having the option. And
yeah.
I'm just curious if that's the way we're trending here with all this player and puck tracking technology, or whether, like I said, it's going to be your run-of-the-mill broadcast is now going to have glowing pucks and
right.
like little ice time trackers.
That's what I mean. Does it enhance the product or does it interrupt the product? And that's where, and different things are distracting to different people. Maybe I'm too big of a purist, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on because I do think there are some stats and some things that are going to be not, like you said, I don't know if it's necessarily telling, but it would be interesting to see, like, oh, what kind of gap do people play on Connor McDavid on average? Because it can't be the same that you play against a fourth line, you know, winger. It can't be the same.
And I would play him like two zones away, and I would still get beat.
I'm going to be on you like white on rice, Connor. That is what I'm going to be today. And there's going to be plenty of things to dissect from there. But yeah, that's a good thing. I was so confused why David Pastrnak won the MVP. Boston's David Pastrnak. And granted, he scored a bunch of goals, but he was on a losing team.
And Tomas Hertl, as you pointed
exactly.
out before, was crushing it.
He was killing it. He was hurtling it all over the place.
Nice.
He was a track
nice
star
pun.
Out there. But yeah, that game's built for him. I mean, this is a guy that in the first NHL game he ever played, and he had four goals, including one that he put in between his legs and roofed and almost got, like, ran out of the building by the opposing team. Like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, the Hurdle, Kopitar, Pacioretty line
mm-hmm.
played overall pretty well. Pacioretty had 2 assists,
good.
But Rick Tocchet filling in for Gerard Gallant behind the bench, by the way.
Yeah.
Not too bad with that combination.
No. And manage the personalities for the Battle of Alberta well. They were on a line together, for goodness sakes, for parts of the All-Star game.
And the fact that he only had one actual defenseman on his whole roster. Shout out to Mark Giordano just carrying the torch for all the Pacific Division D-men.
Actually, shout out to all the goalies that had to play in that, because that sucks.
Why, if you were a goalie, would you ever subject yourself to this torture?
That's all goalieing. This one's just like an extra microscopic level of just hell.
It was just, you could just tell just how done all of these goalies were 2 minutes into the 10-minute period they had
100%.
To play. Like, Braden Holtby, it took him like 3 minutes to be like, all right, we're not trying today, so what am I doing here?
Yeah, not to mention they try to mic up the goalies, be like, oh, and I have to talk to you people. I have to literally get pooped on all over the ice and talk you through about why I'm getting pooped on all over the ice. Yeah, no dice. No,
yeah,
thank you.
I believe Jacob Markstrom was caught with some choice language, which I do not blame him for, because once again,
well, who cares?
It
Green
is
Day
awful
did.
To be a goalie at these events.
Yeah, there was a lot of tic-tac-toeing and not a lot of saving. It was a tough putt for most teams.
Hey, Lindsay.
Yes.
Bringing up Green Day, this is my interpretation of what I think happened, because I didn't get to see it.
So many bleeps. So many bleeps.
I believe they actually did play Basket Case during their set. So that was a good pull by Mark.
I wonder if they can go back on that deal? Are they going to get invited back?
It's a 3-year deal. I would be fascinated to see if Green Day makes it to the postseason or not.
I'm obsessed
if they're
with it.
Hyping us up before NBCSN's first round coverage or not.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then lastly, before we head off to break, I do want to acknowledge the women's 3-on-3 and the participation that they had and the announcement that...
Much better effort from those ladies.
Well,
that was actually enjoyable.
You know
enjoyable.
What? We show up, okay? We show up. When they say perform, we say, okay, how much do you want us to perform? At our best, because we tried everything we do? Cool. That's what we will do, and we will not get paid for it. But I would like to recognize that the NHL, as well as many of their partners, have taken, the interest, to donate over $250,000 on behalf of the remarkable women to the USA Hockey, to Hockey Canada, to support and grow girls hockey across North America. I mean, they have partners like Dunkin' Donuts, Enterprise, FanDuel, Jägermeister, SAP, Ticketmaster, so many. So do yourself and all of us a favor and to grow the game of hockey, not just for boys and for men and for girls and women, just shop at these places.
I was going to say, that was, I thought,
support the people that support
us. A cool thing that NHL PR tweeted out of like, hey, here are all the sponsors that are donating money. I was like, cool. Yep. Here's a list of good companies. So, yeah, everyone find this tweet, NHL Public Relations.
Yep. Look them up.
Patronize.
Give them your business.
These brands.
Right. Yep. Support people who support us. That's all we got to say. So we are going to take our final break of our show tonight. We are going to get our orange slices, retape our sticks and whatnot, and we're going to take a look ahead at the Golden Knights schedule. It's a little bit far off, but we got to get out. We got to figure out where we are. So that's what we're going to do. This is the Nightcap on CBS Sports Radio 1140 and streaming on the radio.com app.
The Nightcap. That's a night with a K, as in Golden Knights. Duh. On CBS Sports Radio 1140.
As Shakira says, whenever, wherever, you can find anything Nightcap related, anything Golden Knights related, anything hockey related that we have done here. On the radio.com app, on Apple Podcasts, on CBS Radio, or CBS Sports Radio 1140.com. Just search The Nightcap, include the V. Make sure you subscribe because your girl needs the subscribers. God, I can't talk today. It's a lot of talking
today.
It's
hard.
It is hard. Talking is tough. But you can listen back and find all of that great stuff via those avenues. And we appreciate you doing so because this is our job.
Chad, could you refrain from speaking millennial?
Yes, seriously. Chad, can you refrain from speaking millennial up in here? Retweet. My name is Lindsay Brown, your host always and forever. And each and every week, I am joined by Ben Goetz, who will not be with us next week. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but we are not going to be here because you're going to be on the road with the Golden Knights.
I will be in sunny Florida, Tampa, to be specific.
Not a bad place this time of year, I hear.
I've heard. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be nice.
I think the hockey team isn't as nice right now because they are... They are on a tear.
I say those Lightning are legit.
Yeah, the meddling Lightning that, you know, lost in the first round of the playoffs after putting together one of the best seasons we've seen from a team ever. We're having some trouble getting the wheels going to start off this season, but good goodness.
They're spinning now, those
They
guys.
Are spinning. But before they get to the Tampa Bay Lightning, they are going to start with the Carolina Hurricanes. But before we go to those future games, because that doesn't start till Friday, we got plenty of time. But we just... I want to lay the land out because the Golden Knights find themselves in a very weird position, a very competitive division. And the difference between making the playoffs and making a magical Stanley Cup run and not making the playoffs at all might come down to like literally a point or two or a points percentage. But in terms of today, your Vegas Golden Knights are 25-20-7, 57 points, which is good for the second wild card position currently. Tied for second in the Pacific Division, but they're in a four-way tie. They're 4-5-1 in their last 10, losing one in a row. Those other teams that are in the mix in terms of the second place in the Pacific Division are the Edmonton Oilers, who are 26-18-5, and they have Connor McDavid, you know. The Calgary Flames, who won the division last year, haven't really figured things out quite yet in terms of consistency, but definitely have the roster and have the makeup to be able to do so. They're 26-19-5. And the Coyotes, you know, the ones that went out and got Taylor Hall like a month and a half ago.
Who's been really good for them, by the way. Taylor Hall's been legit for the Coyotes.
Who knew that Taylor Hall was good at hockey as a former number one overall pick and an MVP winner in the last three seasons? Who knew? Those Arizona Coyotes are 26-20-5. And those are just the ones that are tied with them in second place. I mean, the point totals are so, so freaking close. It all the stuff we've been talking about today that we've been talking about since we started the show, this really is a day-to-day team right now.
It's a day-to-day. I mean, as you pointed out, division and league, there are so many teams in this division that are just up and down. The Canucks are so young. They have
so young
some stud talent, but it's all young. So there's just growing pains because they're learning how to win. Mm-hmm. And luckily for them, they have the margin of error to figure out how to win because no one else is running away in the division either. And you could say the same thing about the Edmonton Oilers, who have, you know, some older guys, but obviously it's McDavid and Draisaitl leading the charge. They got some young guys like Ethan Bear on their blue line.
But a starving fan base, a starving for playoff
ravenous.
Anything. Yes.
And of course, you understand why, because Connor McDavid,
amongst other first overall picks.
Yeah, is not only like one of the best players in hockey, but we learned he's superhuman and can recover from what should be devastating knee injuries
quickly.
Mm-hmm. Super casual, just dropped over All-Star Weekend that his knee injury from this offseason was much more serious.
And then he decided not to get surgery because he didn't want to miss the season. That PCL, who needs it? Broken leg, who needs it?
My knee hurts just talking about this.
Yeah, my knees don't hurt when we don't talk about this. I can't even imagine.
So he's incredible. The Oilers are kind of up and down because they're up and down depending on whether they want to play defense on a given night. But just because of the superstar talent that's there, you certainly can't rule them out. And the Coyotes have been up and down because their stud goaltender this year, Darcy Kuemper, who would have thought that sentence would ever be a thing.
Seriously, though.
That's been uttered, but
100%.
Kuemper got hurt. He was a Vezina, you know, candidate.
Leader.
Might have even been, right, the front runner when he got hurt. He's expected back soon, so the Coyotes have been kind of scuffling of late, but they're about to get a major piece back, so we'll see what they can do there. And like we talked about, the Knights have to muddle their way through that kind of crowded division picture while playing a really tough schedule, while figuring out who they're going to be under a new coach,
right,
and while being on the road for five of their next six games.
Right. And as you said, all these teams that we have these weaknesses, these glaring problems, and that's what's so weird about the Pacific Division, because nobody's really taken ownership and run with this. But the team that you would think is most built for that are the Golden Knights, because they have the veteran players that have the playoff experience deep in the playoffs. They have the leadership. They have the close-knit group. They have some young talent. But for some reason, things aren't working out the way that they had thought, or at least as consistently as they would need to be. But that's kind of the catch-22 about this, because the Golden Knights, I think, in a second, granted, it's not like they're gonna be like, let's start winning and then start winning. They could take over this division so easily.
Oh, totally.
But if they don't change anything, what's gonna change? That's the problem we find ourselves in.
It's a big conundrum, and that's why this team is in just such a weird place. As we kind of started this show, they're just in a weird place right now, and I think we're all fascinated to see how they come out of this break.
Yep, we'll have to cover that more. This was the Nightcap. Sorry we're a little late. We'll see you next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.